This is From Justin to Kane, a podcast where Mike Robertson and Bob LaRue watch one critically acclaimed film and one terrible film and talk about how they are the same. Welcome, everybody, to From Justin to Kane. I'm watching Mike check himself out in the Zoom thing. Is it the background? Is it the blurry background?
Well, it's cutting off half of my head. I'm like, does my head look like that, actually, that it's missing half?
But it's the no, blurry background thing. But the AI is having a really hard time with your curly hair, which is really fun. Anyways, Mike, for the first time ever, has blurred out his background for me, which makes me feel like we're moving further apart from one another than closer. Doesn't matter. Anyways, welcome to From Justin and Kane. We got a hot, steamy episode for you. Would you describe it as hot and steamy?
It's a Cleveland steamer for sure, yeah.
This is a Cleveland steamer of an episode. Holy shit. So the two movies that we're talking about this week are 2017's Song to Song, directed by Terrence Malick.
Boo.
And 2021?
Yeah.
Worst person in the world. Is it, how do you say?
I don't know. I think it's Joachim Trier.
Yeah, I was like, is it Joachim Trier? Joachim Trier?
There's no way to know. There's no way to find out.
We'll never find out. Never listen to an interview.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, those are two films. Song to Song is the terrible movie. We're comparing it to Worst Person in the World.
Yeah, this episode is for the indie film nerds out there.
That's right, which I think consists of every single listener.
If you only watch Marvel movies and Harry Potter and stuff like that, this one is not for you.
As Mike said that, he just looked at me without blinking and just had a look of disdain on his face because that message was directed at me.
Oh, right, you watch Harry Potter. Yeah. I forgot that you watched
all the Harry Potters. I watched the timeline order of Marvel films.
No, I'm not talking about you. You also watched these movies, though.
That's right. That's right. Well, I told you to watch Worst Person
you
in the World.
You told me you watched them both before me.
That's right. Full disclosure, I turned Song to Song on, turned it off, texted you about it. I was kind of just ranting at how horrible it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then we decided to do it for the pod, so I finished it.
Some people think it's one of Terrence Malick's best movies.
I know, and those people deserve to rot in hell, along with Terrence Malick. Just kidding. Some of his work is great. But anyways, those are the two films. It's also nice. They're both kind of like recent, you know? They're both very modern films. They're both very specific.
Mm-hmm.
And they're both the antithesis of like franchise filmmaking. That's
unless we get the Song to Song franchise.
Could be like... Song to Song, and then the sequel is Butt to Butt.
I thought you were going to go in like a Fast and the Furious kind of direction, like two song for number two.
Oh,
but you just said from
funnier.
Butt to Butt.
Butt to Butt. Song to Song.
Ash to Ash.
Ash to Ash. Oh, that's what it is. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I shouldn't have said Butt to Butt. Anyways, I don't even remember what that reference is from, but I know it's a reference to something.
Requiem for a Dream.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Great indie film.
Great indie film, yeah.
Okay, well, let's talk about Worst Person in the World because
sure,
that's the better one. We'll start good and shitty. Like
it was a good movie.
It is a good movie.
It is a good movie. Yeah. Before we were started recording, you said it shook you to your core.
Yeah.
Because of the relatability.
Yeah, I think it's extremely relatable. I thought there were a bunch of scenes in it that I was like, wow, this resonates. Like, you get to a point where like, oh, you have friends with kids and then you don't have kids. And that's like a specific dynamic that the film kind of explores.
Mm-hmm.
As well as dating older is like a very specific thing that a lot of people can relate to.
Mm-hmm.
I myself can. Yeah, just lots of stuff. And then just the reality of life. And it's like, yeah, you're grown up whether you want to be or not.
Yeah, it sucks.
And the unhinging, like when you're a grown up and you still have a wild night and then you really have to pay the price for it in some way, mm-hmm. like... There's something about when you're a like teenager or in your early 20s and you just get, you know, you party hard and there's no repercussions for it. But then at a certain point, if you have like a wild night or a wild bender, you will pay a price.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Right? And it's not just like physically or, you know, like, oh, you have a bad, like hangovers are worse. It's not that. It's like a sort of, it's a social thing. It's it's everything all wrapped up into one. So it's something you really have to decide to do.
So The Worst Person in the World came out last year, 2021. The director is from Norway.
Where's that?
Europe.
yes.
So it's about a 30-something. Her long-term relationship kind of like falls apart because she selfishly cheats on him. Spoiler alert. Then she has problems with her family and just about transcending, or just is about going through relationships and, I don't know, adulthood, I guess.
Oh man, if I could,
that was a terrible recap.
Dude, if I could get you to just synopsize every film ever made, but just like, or just the really famous movies, like really emotionally heartbreaking films, uh-huh. And you did it just like that, just back to back, I think that would go viral.
Well, so this movie is the third film in the director's Oslo trilogy.
Ah.
So he's made two other movies that are not sequels necessarily, but they're thematic sequels, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Similar to, I guess you could say, Red, Blue, and White.
Krzysztof Kieslowski's stuff.
Yeah. So the first one was called Reprise in 2006, and then another one called Oslo 31 August in 2011, which I remember when that movie came out. People were
talking, it good? I haven't seen it.
Never seen it. I just remember people talking about it. I kind of want to check out the other two.
Right. So do I.
So the movies are all loosely related. They're about young characters who are just kind of dealing with treading water in life, you know,
mm-hmm.
and making decisions about where to go and what to do.
Mm-hmm.
Reprise is about two writers trying to evaluate what it's like to be artists. And then Oslo, August 31st, is about a guy in his early 30s who just is feeling isolated, is what the recap says on Wikipedia, is what I think I got that. This movie definitely fits into that, just kind of the idea of treading water or just not knowing what to do with your life.
Mm-hmm.
So the director, Joachim Trier, or Joachim Trier, Joachim Trier.
Joachim Trier.
Joachim Trier. So he is the son of filmmakers. His mom was a documentarian. His dad was a sound designer.
Nepotism.
And his grandfather was a field director.
Extra nepotism. Mm-hmm. What is a field director? What the fuck does that mean? Move that field over there.
Just a, like what? Just kind of, it says here it's tasked with overseeing the direction of a film story. It sounds like director?
A film director.
Yeah. May have been a documentarian.
Oh, I see. Right.
When I worked on a documentary series, I had to like put together these story threads based on stuff that happened.
Right.
And unfortunately, nothing happened. So it was very difficult. anyway, the director also claims he's remotely related, his words, to none other than Lars von Trier, the controversial Danish auteur.
Yes. I mean, same last name. It's happened before.
Mm-hmm.
But I was wondering if there was any relation.
So the actress, Renate Reinsve, I butchered that so badly. Renate.
Holy fuck. Reinsve. That was great.
So she did a great job.
Oh, yeah. Big time.
But hilariously, before she was asked to make this movie, she was going to give up acting.
Really?
And pursue carpentry.
Huh.
So, yeah, she bought a house in Oslo after doing some renovation, was like, oh, you know what? I kind of like carpentry. So she was just going to become a carpenter.
Mm-hmm.
But then Mr. Trier, who she had worked with previously in, I think, in Oslo, August 31st, she had a bit part in that. And so he, I guess, for the longest time had been like, oh, I'm going to make a movie with this person one day because she's a good actor.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like he got there in the nick of time.
Yeah, it seems like it.
She could have been building picnic benches.
Yeah, she had two lines in his Oslo August 31st movie.
Mm.
And she was in that movie when she was in school. She went to the Oslo National Academy of the Arts, I guess. So she'd been at it for 10 years-ish, decided to give up probably for a lot of the same reasons that the character in this movie just is feeling things and making big changes. Mm-hmm. The movie itself Worst Person in the World, in competition at 2021 Cannes Film Festival.
Mm-hmm.
And that she won Best Actress for her performance. So there you go.
Mm.
And then at the upcoming Academy Awards, it was nominated for Best International Feature Film and Best Screenplay.
Deserves such nominations. Deserves. Probably a few more.
Yeah, I think it may take Best Screenplay. I don't know what other things. I don't really pay attention to the Oscars anymore, the older I get.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think that's true of everyone.
Yeah, I guess so.
They like got rid of editing or something recently because there's not enough time. So they're like, you know what? We're just not going to televise the editing Oscar.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is hilarious because, you know, it just, yeah, the Oscars are a crock of shit.
I'm surprised that if they're so desperate for people to watch, they should have the best stunt performance because then you get to show some stunts.
Yeah, I mean, you're not wrong.
Yeah.
They should show all the technical Oscars, like people who like figure out new ways of like sanding down glass elements for lenses, you know? Really interesting, riveting technical material that people would love to witness.
Well, you can watch that if you want to, but you have to go out of your way to see it.
Right, right. And I will never do that.
So this movie is very highly rated. Rotten Tomatoes says 97%.
Wow.
Are positive.
It's no Paddington 2.
No. Average rating of 8.6 out of 10, it says, is what it's currently standing at.
Mm-hmm.
The movie has 14 chapters in it and narration, which is the first similarity between the two movies, is there's occasional narration.
That's right. That's right. But like sparse and not always, it's not like a storybook. They're both just like weird.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I guess, I don't know, the narration of Worst Person in the World is sort of like a storybook because of the chapter structure.
Yeah, but it's not the characters doing it. It's like some other narrator.
Guy. It's some guy, right?
I thought it was a woman.
Is it a woman?
It's been so long since I've seen it. I saw it last week.
Yeah, I saw it 2 weeks ago.
But anyway.
Anyways, great similarity, great samesies.
But the chapter, yeah, the chapter thing works well. Narration, I think, was done interestingly.
Did you panic about the chapter thing? Because like the first chapter was like 30 minutes or something. And then I was like, oh my God, how are they going to get through these chapters? And they do.
They do, yeah.
Yeah, they pull it off.
They rip through it. So the director, Joachim Trier, or Joe Chime Trier.
Hey, Joachim.
When he and his co-writer are writing movies, they like come up with like set pieces they want to include in movies, and they try and write chunks of the movie around that. So they wanted to do a thing where a character is walking around an area where there's nobody else is moving.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like a couple of very surreal sequences in this movie where one of them, when she does mushrooms, and it's very trippy and funny.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other scene is she runs away from her current relationship to go spooch another guy, but it's all in her mind, clearly, and she runs away, and everybody in Oslo is frozen.
Well, there's another similarity. A lot of smooching in both movies.
Yeah, a lot of smooching.
And fornicating.
Yeah.
With multiple partners. Both, Anyways.
And continue. Running. There's also a lot of running.
Well, that's right. Yeah. Classic Malick influence, just chasing actors around, you know, with the low-hanging sun.
Well, in The Worst Person in the World, she runs because she wants to ambulate and get somewhere. Whereas in friggin' Song to Song, they kind of just run around as a way of like flirting.
Yeah.
It kind of is like they have to fill time, it really feels like. Mm-hmm. So you can really tell during a lot of the movie that the actors are, that Terrence Malick is like, you guys love each other, or he's giving them some vague direction or something. And then they're it feels like you're watching like a contact improv class from like a theater school.
That's exactly what it is. Even. But it's just like being shot by a camera and a Steadicam operator. It's so unnecessary.
Yeah. One of the greatest living cinematographers, arguably,
Yeah, Chivo, sweet baby Chivo, yeah.
And maybe one of the great living directors, even though his recent work doesn't really back that statement up. But
no, except for Hidden Life. Hidden Life is good.
And then also the actors. Also, he's got A-list talent, and it feels like everyone's slumming for some reason.
Yes. Well, they've worked with him more than once, like Cate Blanchett. I know we're talking about Worst Person in the World, but whatever. But Cate Blanchett, Rooney Mara, I've worked with him multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I don't know. This movie fucking sucks. Song to song. That's so bad. Anyways, let's finish Worst Person in the World.
Here's a bit of a samesy. Trier wanted Worst Person in the World to feel like a musical at times, but without the characters breaking into song. Just kind of like the moments of introspection, but done in a fanciful way.
That is a great articulation of how it felt to watch.
Yeah, there's a lot of scenes where it feels like there's something kind of surreal or very obviously surreal. And then there's it feels like you're watching a musical, but nobody's singing. The characters are just kind of being in their own head or expressing their thoughts in a big way.
Totally, totally. That's awesome. I didn't even think about it like that. That's great.
Yeah. Wait, did I already said the thing about how when he was doing the scene with the where she was running through Oslo and everybody's frozen, it was all done practically. Everybody was just standing still.
What? Really?
Yeah. We were trying to figure out when we were watching it if it was CG or if there's some compositing. They did do a little bit of fixing, but yeah.
They do it and they don't pull it off. How did they pull it off in this movie?
I don't know. It worked. They just got everybody to stand still.
Remember the dad's holding the corn cob and he's shaking?
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck? Oh, man. How did they pull that off? That's crazy. They probably got dancers.
Maybe.
People with real tight chassis to stand that still.
Jesus.
Christ almighty. That's awesome.
So at the beginning of that sequence, she freezes the world by pressing a light switch.
Mm-hmm.
And her boyfriend is pouring coffee.
Mm-hmm.
People think that that's CG, like that there's like coffee flowing from a thing, but that's literally just a prop with like brown rubber.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
That's so sick.
It looks like that. So yeah, apparently in an interview, Trier said that he wanted to incorporate things that were like French New Wave kind of feeling of the audience is aware that they're watching a movie.
Mm-hmm.
But they still are able to enjoy it, like kind of blur that line between Stanislavski and Brecht. You know what I'm saying, man?
You're just making mouth sounds. I got no idea who those guys
it's
are.
It's like theater people.
Just kidding. Yeah, I was a real theater snob in high school.
Oh, okay. Yeah, of course you would know that.
People love to say Brechtian.
Yes.
Yeah. Stanislav. Oh, so pretentious. I love it. Anyways. That's cool. That's super cool. I can't believe I want to watch the sequence again to see if anybody's shaking. Like holding a pot like this, I couldn't do it. I'd be shaking.
I swear when I watched it, there was a couple of people she walked by that looked...
Were moving?
Like they were, yeah, shaking a tiny bit.
Right, right. What about that dog that was taking a dump, but the poo-poo was just halfway between the butt and the ground? How about that? Explain that to me, Mr. Prop Guy.
It was brown
it's
rubber.
It's called fishing line.
Yeah.
They're just hanging it from a fishing rod, and a guy was standing on a ladder like 10 feet away.
Exactly, exactly.
Song to song. Oh, got a burp coming. Yep. Shout out to Blue Menu Sparkling Water. Okay. Making me burp on my podcast. Not a sponsor. We don't have sponsors. We never will. Okay. Song to song. Released in 2017, written and directed by Terrence Malick. This film is a great example of his sort of second half of his career where he starts to make improvised films.
Yes, and it feels so improvised.
I don't know what you mean.
There was some improv on the set of Worst Person in the World, just to let you know.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
So there's a scene right there. There's a little bit of improv in both movies.
Just a smidge of just improv.
I think there was a smidge in this... In the Worst Person in the World, it seemed like there was only improv in this other one.
I just hate the idea, like Terrence Malick, like leans into one actor's ear and he's like, "You are infatuated with this woman. You just want to be near her." And then goes over to the lady and just says, "Like nothing repulses you more than to be within 5 feet of this actor."
Yeah.
Action. And then just watching them chase each other around and giggle.
Yeah, and tumble. Not so much tumbling.
Yeah, yeah.
I really don't like tumbling.
Makes me nauseous just thinking about it. So this film is starring Ryan Gosling, Rooney Mara, Michael Fassbender, Natalie Portman, and Kate Blanchett.
Yeah.
Christian Bale is also in the film and was cut out.
And there's also a smattering of celebrities, like celebrity musicians.
That's right.
Iggy Pop, Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Oh, Val Kilmer is in the movie as well.
He is, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, but yeah, Iggy Pop. Well, there's actually a list of bands cut out, Arcade Fire being one of them.
Honestly, they dodged a bullet.
Yeah, they might have, hey?
Yeah, when I saw like Patti Smith and Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers in it, and I was like, guys, like you're in this movie now.
So Christian Bale, Hayley Bennett, Benicio del Toro, Arcade Fire, Iron and Wine, Fleet Foxes, Boyd Holbrook, Trevant Rhodes, and Angela Bettis were all cut from the film.
Sad.
And I guess I didn't think about it like that, but you're right. They're better for it.
Yeah. Kinda, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not so bad that it's not like it's a racist screed or anything like that. It's not like they're like, oh no, I can't believe I'm in this movie. It's just like, so just it's like, just dumb and boring.
Yeah, there's probably no better way to say it.
Yeah.
This movie is weird because development took 6 years or so.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. The disdain in your voice is really, I'm loving it.
There's probably not a heck of a lot of podcasts that come down very hard on Terrence Malick.
No, and we're going to be one of them.
And I've seen some movies of his that are awesome. So
yeah,
he doesn't suck necessarily, but this movie, woof. And I don't mean that in like a positive canine way.
Yeah, you mean it in a bad canine way, like a sad woof.
I mean like woof instead of like woof.
You should, I guess I'll explain too, that I texted you while watching this film. I'd had a couple beers and I said, Terrence Malick is a fucking hack. And at times he is. At times he is.
At times he is. Also, I just want to let everybody know that we're recording this at 4:20. So if you got it, blaze it.
Yeah, it's 4:20 somewhere. And guess what? It's right now, right here.
Yeah.
I love that. That's great. That's great. So yeah, development took something like 6 years. Originally, the film was called Lawless. I don't know why. It was also called Limitless.
Okay.
Both of which are titles that were claimed by other films.
Yeah, and Limitless was like a dumb action movie. And who'd have thought that that one would be the better of the two?
Yeah, and Lawless is about prohibition. I'd say the two films are better than this film.
Yes.
And they're both kind of dumb. Yeah, Terrence Malick like owned the title, and so he gave it to John Hillcoat to use for his movie Lawless.
Hmm.
The other thing too, I don't really understand how those titles make any sense, considering it's like a music producer Austin City Limits thing.
Yeah,
I don't know. It just doesn't make a lot of sense.
It seemed like Terrence had access, like backstage access, to walk around South by Southwest or something like that, or
it was both Austin South City? By Southwest and Austin City.
Yeah, Lions, and just see both. And just hang out with musicians and just do stuff.
Well, he's also insanely famous and a recluse, but he also lives in Austin.
Oh, that makes
so
much sense.
I think it was like, hey, let's shoot today. So get this. The film was shot in 40 days over 2 years.
No, that's
so
dumb.
20 days a year of shooting. So it was very sporadic schedule wise. And then there were 3 years of subsequent voiceover recording.
Why? Why did this take so long?
I don't know. So the first cut of the film was 8 hours long. And Terrence Malick, imagine an 8-hour version of this fucking movie. Anyways,
yeah,
so he goes to the studio and the financiers, and he's like, I'm so sorry. I need more time because like, the way it is now, it's just too long, and I need to make it perfect, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
This speech.
The Beatles Get Back documentary is 8 hours long, and that arguably is too long for that movie even.
Yeah. Oh, it is. So, yeah, shooting was a hodgepodge. Began, get this. So the film comes out in 2017. Guess when they started shooting?
2013?
September 2012.
Ah, Terrence, why you gotta be like this?
And then they shot in March 2012. Oh, also, a photo of him on the set of this movie is one of the first photos taken of him since his like recluse thing that he started doing in the 80s.
But didn't he did he not put out a bunch of movies between like Tree of Life and this movie? So he was kind of just filming this movie sporadically and then just kind of pooped it out at the end.
He was. He had three movies come out in like 3 years, and this was one of them. But this is the one that like took the most time.
For some reason.
Yeah, they shot in March 2012. They shot in October 2012. Val Kilmer shot in November 2012. And then they shot into 2013. Mm. Yeah, Christian Bale shot for 3 days, and then he was cut from the film. It was edited. The film was edited for 3 years. And then it was purchased 2016 and wasn't released until in February 2015, it was bought by a distribution company. And then it had its premiere at South by Southwest, where it was primarily shot, March 2017. There's 2 years right there. The film just sat on a shelf.
I love the idea that Terrence Malick, of all people, is like one of those filmmakers who just kind of has an unfinished movie sitting on a hard drive.
Yeah.
That he's just kind of still wrestling over and is still being way too dramatic about. Just like, oh, I'll never finish this film that I shot. Freaking guy.
Okay, so that's all I have on it. It's just like sporadically shot and completely improvised. Oh, Ryan Gosling said in an interview after watching it at the premiere that he still had no idea what it was about, which is hilarious.
Well, I saw some reviews where someone says it's not clear what it's about, but we'll be unpacking it for years.
Yeah, that's not true. There's nothing.
This was a positive review. Yeah, and I'm like, honestly, you're wrong. That's not true.
That's giving it way too much credit.
Yeah.
The reviews are very mixed. The majority of them are bad, but there are a few people who are like holdouts, who are diehard Malick fans.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to think of like a fun thing to say, and it just didn't happen, and so I stuttered. Anyways, these Malick fans, Terrential Malick fans.
Okay.
Fuck.
I can cut that out if you want.
No, leave it, leave it.
And you need to be publicly embarrassed.
This is about authenticity, okay? We're both good and bad at this.
That's right.
Anyways.
Yeah, I mean, it's about authenticity, song to song. If it's about anything, it's about authenticity.
Authenticity and ash to ash.
Ash to ash.
So I'm just going to read some like reviews that sort of are different.
Okay.
So there's a 5-star review from The Independent written by Christopher Hooten, who claims that at the time of the release of this film, it had become fashionable to ridicule Malick's recent films, but that given a chance, this film was a quote masterpiece and quote life-changing.
Yes.
In Entertainment Weekly, Joe McGovern derided it as incoherent, disconnected, self-interrupting, obsessed with pointless minutiae, and crammed full of odd, limp stabs at profundity. You'll find yourself searching in the margins of each shot for something of someone tangible to grasp onto. Film critic Matt Zoller cites on RogerEbert.com, gave the film 2.5 stars out of 4. He had praised Malick's like previous films and was obviously a fan. He has a quote that says, "I don't believe that the Austin-based director has ever made a bad film." And then he wrote about Song to Song. "Song to Song is the first Malick film I've watched where the dots never came together to form a legible image. And I think that's a very good way of putting this film." It's like, maybe it needed another 6 years in the edit. I don't know.
Maybe.
And he emphasizes the film's need for more rhetorical connective tissue. And that would further connect to the film's themes as well as better characterizations. Because of the film's highly chaotic nature, Seitz concluded that the film is a brainy concept album made up of B-sides and filler. Mm-hmm. The musicianship is superb, but the songs needed work. Which is kind of an interesting appraisal of the film.
Well, I feel bad for anybody who is a fan of Ryan Gosling and Natalie Portman and just sees celebrities they recognize on the cover at the video store or video on demand.
Oh my God, yes. At like Blockbuster.
And you're just like a person who's like has basic movie tastes. Like you just love Harry Potter and Marvel. And
again, Mike is looking at me with disdain as he says that.
And then you're renting this and you're just like, what the hell am I watching? This is just You can't even fathom like what the movie is because you've never mm-hmm. seen a movie so overly arty.
Yes.
Like arty to a fault.
Yeah, it's just trying too much.
Way too hard.
You tried too hard, Terry Malick, and that's why you're a fucking hack. Let's get into the Samesies corner. My first one is like very specific and frankly a terrible one, but I just need to start with this one.
Mm-hmm.
Both films have sequences where the sun is extremely low and a Steadicam is chasing a character.
Mm.
So when the world freezes and she starts jogging to go kiss that guy on the tree, the sun is very low and it's all Steadicam work. And then obviously in this film and almost every film since Tree of Life, it's magic hour and there's a Steadicam and the actors are just chasing each other
exactly.
around like a couple of farm cats.
It's true. That's a good way to describe it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Malick and Chloe Zhao kind of have the same style in a way of just like hire a great cinematographer to just follow these people around. We'll just kind of chop it up in the edit, make it make some sense. And also it's magic hour always.
Yes.
There's like this dreaminess that comes with that.
Well, it's a cheat code because it looks nice.
Yeah. And people think it's even like you hear about Kevin Feige or whatever his name is, the Marvel guy.
Yeah.
He's just talking about how he's like, Eternals, we've never made a movie so good looking. And it's just because it's like.
Because the whole movie took place between 6:45 and 7 p.m.
Yeah, exactly.
Somehow it's 2.5 hours long, but visually it takes place in 15 minutes.
Yeah, we got 50 minutes to get this shot. They say every day for 3 months.
Yeah. Oh, man. What a great gig, though. Well, no, the issue is you shoot in the morning, you shoot at night because they look the same.
Yeah.
And then you just have a weird buffer period of like 12 hours in between.
Both movies have a lot of flirting.
Yes.
And because in Worst Person in the World, there's like that scene where she goes to that wedding. She just kind of crashes the wedding, then just flirts with that one guy.
Yeah.
They do everything except cheat,
mm-hmm.
which is like a clever little scene.
It is.
And then like literally every scene in Song to Song is two people kind of flirting. It doesn't matter which actor we're talking about. Like even the scenes with Ryan Gosling and what's his putz?
Michael Fassbender.
Michael Fassbender, yeah. Even those scenes kind of had like a flirty energy to it.
They're both, like, dare I say, sexy movies.
Yeah, 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 that's right.
I think they're both sexy, you know?
Yeah. And there's definitely, like, the flirting also is very childlike sometimes. Mm-hmm. Just kind of the how kind of immature it is.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they both have, like, relationships starting and ending via flirting with new people
yeah.
in both movies. Like Michael Fassbender has, what, three relationships?
Mm-hmm.
Ryan Gosling has two. I was like, why is Kate Blanchett in this movie? Like, where?
And she just kind of plays the same character she always plays in every movie.
Yeah.
Where she's just like Kate Blanchett kind of character, you know what I mean?
But boy, is she good.
She wears shades and speaks assertively.
Yes. This, it felt like Terrence Malick was like, I want to see these two people kiss and these two people kiss and these two people kiss.
Yes.
And I want to see this person's titties. And he was just naming A-list actors. And then he's like, I need you to book all these people for 40 days over 2 years. And I'm going to make me a porno.
It's just improv. What if I take my shirts off?
I just improvised with my clothes off.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, that seems like a thing that you'd expect from an exercise like this.
Yes. Exercise is a generous term.
As I mentioned, both movies have a lot of parties in them. And the mm-hmm. main characters are at parties with people that they don't like. And they explicitly
yes.
say so. And there's also children at some of the parties sometimes.
Yeah. Both films have like an external art form that sort of permeates through the movie, but isn't actually what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
So like adult graphic novels seem to sort of filter throughout. And I guess also storytelling, like with the chapter structure and stuff and the narration. But there's like storytelling as this theme throughout the movie, even though it's not about that. It's about this like subjective experience of like adulthood and shit like that. And then with Song to Song, it's not about music at all, but in every scene, there's somebody playing music.
Yes.
So it's kind of this weird dichotomy in both films where it's like, why is this thing ever present, but like doesn't really have anything to do with anything?
But and speaking of music, both movies have needle drops.
Oh yeah, big time.
So a lot of Song to Song is just like every scene is like a new song playing in the background.
Mm-hmm.
Literally goes song to song. Worst person yes. in the world, there'll be like sequences with musical breaks where
which are very good.
Yeah, the song choices are very good. But it does kind of feel like needle drops in both movies. I think both movies are about odes to fleeting youth in that the worst person in the world is about someone, you know, turning 30 and having to transition into adulthood.
Mm-hmm.
And Song to Song is Terrence Malick probably living vicariously through his actors, because I'm sure he was like 80 something when this movie was made.
No, he's not that old now, is he?
I don't know. I thought he was.
No, I think he was maybe in his early 60s when this film came out.
I just imagined like a freaking old 80-year-old dude. He's 78 right now, so you're right. He was much younger.
Late
4 years
well,
ago.
Well, I mean, 20. Oh yeah, and yeah. He was in his late 60s probably.
He looks pretty good for 78.
Yeah, he doesn't look bad at all.
Sorry, I just looked him up to see how old he was, and I saw a headline from the New York Post with a picture from Song to Song saying Terrence Malick should have quit making movies years ago. That's what the headline is.
Oh man, I kind of agree with that. Tree of Life and then Get Out, you know what I mean?
Exactly. That was like a real hit for him.
Oh yeah. Well, it was his renaissance, I think.
Yeah, it was. And then
got
cocky.
It was the first movie that he made like that where it was improvised.
Oh yeah, right, because he didn't always have that style.
Thin Red Line, scripted. Badlands, scripted.
Yeah, I think both movies kind of are about characters trying to be authentic. And in The Worst Person in the World, she's like trying to be authentic to her true self by making the choices that reflect who she thinks she is.
Mm-hmm.
And then in Song to Song, they're doing improv, and it feels like they're trying to be as realistic as possible. It does this thing that all movies that have a lot of improv in them do, like dramas and mumblecore kind of things, where it's trying to be like portray realism through improv, but it kind of creates this uncanny valley of realism.
Yes.
Where it feels artificial, even though they're trying so hard for it to seem very real, because I think you can't really capture that energy like authentically, you know, when you're making a movie. So it's like there's this kind of artificiality that comes with their very brazen attempt to be very, very truthful and authentic. And it just kind of comes off as cringy.
Yes. Yes. Cringy is the word. I would describe the film as a cringe fest.
Yeah. This is Terrence Malick posting cringe in 2017.
That's right. Both. I mean, both these movies have a similar vibe in the way that it's like all of the characters are like young-ish and mm-hmm. white.
Yes.
And it's sort of like the very sort of specific trials and tribulations of that demographic.
Yeah.
Because it's like, even when characters aren't innately successful in both films, they're just like still okay, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And it's this like specific sort of thing where they're just bummed. Like Natalie Portman's, from the brief narrative I could try to figure out, she's like a server or whatever in some small town or whatever.
Yeah.
And then he basically scoops her off her feet, that kind of thing. Yeah, and then in Worst Person in the World, the main character is like unsuccessful for a lot of it, but she's also fine.
Yeah.
It just doesn't matter. She's just not stoked on it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they're both kind of about white privilege.
Yeah, and like the same socioeconomics, even though they're different countries, it's just like, well, you haven't figured your stuff out yet, but you'll be fine, you know? Instead of just like absolute oppression. I guess what I'm saying is nobody's really oppressed in either film.
No. Yeah, both movies have like characters in these very, very nice wooden houses. They find themselves in very similar, like big windows, a lot of wood,
mm-hmm.
like on a big acreage kind of looking properties.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like the houses are a little too nice in both of these movies.
No, it's so true. So true.
Speaking of white privilege, yeah, who are these people that like they have access to like Patti Smith, you know? There's just random scenes where like they're just chatting with Patti Smith or like other like huge celebrities. Well,
It's because Michael Fassbender is like a high-end music producer.
Oh, I know that. But they don't really give you enough context before throwing some like big-name music celebrities at you.
No, it's ridiculous. Or even when like Iggy Pop's talking on that couch and it's like, it's also inherently uncinematic and weird.
And kind of nonsensical.
Yeah, it's just silly, the whole fucking
thing. Yeah, it's more like, it's kind of like, look who we got.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, exactly. Yeah, it's a ridiculous film, and I wish it didn't exist, but it does, and now we're talking about it on this podcast.
Yeah. Love it. Both movies have drug trips in them.
That's
right. First person in the world, she goes on a drug trip, which is a set piece in the film, and there's not an explicit drug trip in Song to Song, but you know someone's on drugs, maybe even Malick himself while making the film.
The whole movie is on drugs.
Yeah, it feels like you're drunk kind of watching, or you're watching a drunk movie, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. No, it's inebriated in how it's made. Dare I say too many red solo cups in Song to Song? Should be called Cup to Cup. Other films called Night of Cup of Nights or Night of Cups or whatever? Yeah. This should have been called Night of Cups.
It should have been, yeah.
But instead of K-N-I-G-H-T, it's just with an N.
That's right, that's right.
Nothing but cups in this fucking movie.
A lot of solo cups, yeah, for sure.
Can I also say this? Maybe both films are part of a thematic series of films.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I would say that.
Because like obviously Worst Person in the World is one and has been stated as such, but I think Terrence Malick is trying to be so specific with his films that it's clearly... It's. I think they all live in the same world.
Well, there's an existentialism to both. Mm-hmm. Like this movie, Worst Person in the World, definitely very existential, because a person is coming to grips with their own life choices. Mm-hmm. And I think Terrence Malick's movies, especially Tree of Life, and his other ones going forward, are also existential in that like they kind of just explore life and reality, you know, man. Well, I mean, Tree of Life especially, very, very much just like, this is the universe and this is dinosaurs and this is a human life from baby to die.
Yes.
Both movies are about the worst people in the world.
Hey, that's awesome.
Her character is called the worst person in the world. That's kind of like a wink, wink to just probably her own perspective on her own life choices.
Well, it's how we all feel sometimes.
How we all feel, exactly.
Yeah, that's so funny.
Yeah, and then the Song to Song is like, all of those characters are just like, you never want to hang out with those people in real life.
Fuck no. They're so annoying. Terrible. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that's a great way to end it. What a beautiful...
I saved it for last.
Samesie. Oh, man. You're one clever, clever boy there, Mike.
There's still some juice left in the old Samesie orange. I'm not so clever after all.
Yeah, you really fucked up the follow through on that, but that's okay. Well, I mean, any closing remarks or thoughts on these two films?
I mean, I thought the Worst Person in the World was great. Loved it when I watched it. And I'm going to maybe watch the other two movies in his little trilogy here, the Oslo trilogy.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me know if you do. I would love to hear your thoughts.
And this is the second time I've seen Song to Song, because when you texted me and were like, I'm watching Song to Song, it blows ass. Not necessarily your words, but your sentiments expressed that way.
It blows ass to ass.
Yeah, it does blow ass to ass. I kind of just like nodded knowingly because I was like, I've seen this film. It sucks.
Yeah.
And I think like you, I was also back. I saw it in 2017 when it came out. And I think like you, I was charmed by the idea. Terrence Malick made a movie with Ryan Gosling and Rooney Mara and all these other people.
Yeah, the casting is amazing. Like it's that lures you in, and then you just get sucker punched by mediocrity immediately.
Yeah, just so boring.
Yeah. Stunningly bad, I would say.
Yeah. But there's, I mean, what did Terrence Malick think filming people moshing at the tender age of like 75 or whatever he was when he made this movie? Because there's a lot of moshing in the movie.
Tons of moshing.
They get right in the pit.
Yeah, yeah. Pit to Pit would have been a better title, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, he made the movie. Obviously, he was enticed by something.
Yeah, it doesn't necessarily feel like a really, really old man trying to figure out what the kids think mm-hmm. or do, you know? Like, it doesn't feel like out of touch in the way that it should.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. Maybe he's a cool grandpa.
Yeah, maybe. I'm sure he's a good time to hang out with. Like, don't get me wrong. He's probably a great guy.
Oh, yeah, I bet.
Move over, Gramps. Let somebody else make this film, and they probably would write a script first.
Yeah, exactly.
So that something happens.
Yeah, this movie and a bunch of mumblecore movies. I think Hannah Takes the Stairs was another like mumblecore movie I saw around the same time, where it was like a bunch of improv is happening, and it just feels annoying. And it feels like they're just trying to figure out what the movie is they're making while they're making it. Which I guess when you're doing an improv scene, it's like you build the plane as you're flying it, you know, which is sounds like a really fun, inspirational way of synopsizing what improv is. But that's that's all well and good for improvised theater, where the scenes are 3 minutes, you know, not 2 hours long.
Well, and people will commend you for eating shit in a theater, but they won't do it when they're watching a movie.
No.
Because then it's like, once something has been through an editing phase, like, if it's not good, fuck you. But if it's not edited, then it's okay, you know? Yeah. So I think that's like a fundamental difference between the two things.
Yeah, one of the few improv, like, movie mediums, I think. One of the few improv, like, do screen mediums that works, I think, is, like, Curb Your Enthusiasm, which I believe has a, like, loose script.
Is it not?
It's not fully improvised.
Scripted? I have no idea. Oh, interesting.
No, it's, like, the dialogue is improvised, but I think that the script, they would have to have it all planned out, because it feels very Seinfeld, where every single plot point kind of connects to each other. But I just think that the way that the dialogue, but it feels more authentic in that show than it does in any of these movies.
Mm-hmm. Well, don't watch this film if you haven't already, but definitely watch Worst Person in the World, because it's great.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure it'll win Best Screenplay, I bet. That's my prediction.
Here's friggin' hoping.
Okay.
This feels over.
Nice.
Does it feel over?
I would say it does, yeah.
Oh, okay, good.
Is there anything else you wanted to say about these movies?
Premature? No, not really.
Yeah. Samesy. So next week's movies are the 1969 Robert Downey Sr. directed film, comedy film, Putney Swope.
It is a comedy, yeah.
And I guess that's on YouTube. If you search for it, you can watch it on there. And I think it was on Tubi, so you can watch it for free relatively easily.
Yeah.
And also check your local library. And then the bad movie is the 2022 rom-com, Jennifer Lopez and Owen Wilson, called Marry Me. So I'll be excited to talk about that with Bob, because he loves rom-coms.
I do. I do love to talk about rom-coms.
And he loves Robert Downey's, junior or senior. He doesn't care.
I like them both.
As long as it's a Robert Downey, he's into it.
Yeah, that's right.
You're a bit of a Robert Downey yourself.
What does that mean? Oh, well,
because your name is Robert, and then also you're a softie. Like Downey the fabric softener.
Oh, I was like, I can't figure out the link here. Yeah, you're so right.
Just kind of improvised that, and it failed, as most things improv does.
But you know what? It didn't go through an edit suite, so it's okay.
I'll work on that one for 6 years.
Wow, that joke lasted 8 hours, and then somehow he whittled it down to a crisp 2.5.
Yeah.
And it still sucks.
Was Song to Song 2.5?
No, I think it was just under 2 hours.
Yeah, I kind of lost track
of time. A merciful 2 hours.
Yeah, it just felt like it didn't end.
Yeah, well, it didn't. It's still talking about it.
Yeah. It's one of the films, one of those films where the word interminable applies.
So appropriately.
Also, we really roasted Terrence Malick in this movie.
I don't think he gets roasted enough.
We usually don't roast that much.
No. We do it out of admiration.
Yeah, I mean, we know he's got a good movie in him. Mm-hmm. He's like, you know, he's up there in the canon, you know, with like the Kubricks and the
Scorsese's and whatnot. But also, fuck him.
All right, bye, everybody.
Bye.